under the state code to deny this if they have proven to be untrustworthy, unreliable, and not filed reports that were honest, truthful, on time. Thank you.
My name is Nick Caleb. I'm the climate energy attorney at Breach Collective. I'm here today to testify in strong opposition to Zenith's ACDP application. Zenith has proven itself to be a particularly dishonest corporate actor. Since arriving in Portland, there's substantial evidence that they have never operated in full compliance with the law. Their business model relies on exploiting loopholes, strong-arming regulators with threats of litigation, and continuing to shift the goalposts, betting that no one will hold them accountable. This is not a company that merits trust, let alone a fresh permit that enables further harm to our community's health and environment. This pattern began when Zenith first came to Portland. In its 2018 off-permit change notification to DEQ, Zenith represented that its new rail unloading infrastructure will make operations more efficient and result in no new throughput and no new increase in volatile organic compound emissions. Zenith has since increased its throughput every year since, putting communities and tribal resources at ever-increasing risk. This is one example among many of Zenith's past dishonesty. Today, I bring your attention to a new example. On April 18, 2025, Zenith submitted legal arguments to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals that directly undermined the integrity of this permit application. In this filing, Zenith objected to the characterization of their land use compatibility statement conditions as being conditions of approval that are binding. Instead, they asserted that these conditions are, quote, self-imposed operational limitations. In other words, voluntary conditions that they can safely ignore at their leisure. This argument is all the more outrageous because public records indicate that it was Zenith who originally proposed these conditions to the City of Portland officials. This argument is furthermore in blatant contrast to the clear text of the 2022 and 2025 LUX applications and contradicts numerous public representations made by Zenith, the City of Portland, and DEQ. Zenith's new position is alarming. For years, in response to community skepticism, we were told that Zenith's commitments were ironclad. Now, in a court of law, Zenith has revealed their true position. They believe they can ignore or reinterpret these conditions as it suits them. This is not just bad faith. It is a signal that Zenith will challenge any conditions that DEQ believes are binding whenever their pursuit of profit is assisted by operating in defiance of them. It is a direct threat to DEQ's authority and the public's right to transparency. I urge DEQ to pause this proceeding immediately, allow the ongoing legal process to resolve the question of enforceability of these conditions. Do not grant this permit until Zenith's obligations are clarified, solidified, and made truly enforceable. Our community's health, our environment, and the credibility of this agency depend on it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lynn Spitaleri Handlin. I'm a member of Extinction Rebellion PDX, and just speaking on my behalf, I'm here today to ask and actually beg you to deny Zenith Energy the ACDC permit. According to the current head of the EPA, their mission is now to make cars, homes, and businesses cheaper to operate. Nothing about protecting our environment. In these times, you all here at the DEQ are the last line of defense for our environment. Zenith Energy has been violating rules and regulations, increasing throughput after saying they wouldn't, engaged in illegal lobbying, and generally behaved in a very shady manner. Clearly, they cannot be trusted. You've heard lots of other stories here. I'll be submitting testimony with more details, but you all have assessed the fines. You know how bad they are. If granted this permit, they will expand even more, further endangering our communities, our river, increasing the amount of air pollution all along the way. And you must also consider the enormous potential for massive emissions when the earthquake hits or a derailment. It's a lot more than those little numbers that you had up there. It's huge. Everybody else, or not everybody, but a few people here have given you code sections and things, which I don't have with me, but you all know, you all here at the DEQ have the authority and the duty and the ethical obligation to deny this very dodgy company an air permit. Thank you.
My name is Keith Curldove, and I'm the Climate and Communities Manager at Washington Conservation Action, and I'm also the Coalition Manager for Stand Up to Oil. So thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I urge DEQ to deny Zenith's air permit application. The Stand Up to Oil Coalition has been supporting the Portland community's resistance against Zenith for nearly 9 years now. In that time, it has been abundantly clear with their dozens of violations that Zenith is not a good neighbor to this community. It is equally clear that the local residents who will be most affected do not trust Zenith or approve of their actions. They know that denying Zenith's air permit is what is best and safest for Portland and the surrounding region. Zenith's greenwashing efforts cover up serious dangers and illegal actions. Though Zenith has said that they will transition to renewable fuels, those renewable fuels share the same dangers and risks of conventional fossil fuels. Harmful emissions and the dangers of pollution from spills and accidents are nearly identical. Furthermore, Zenith intends to greatly increase their operations and the quantity of products. Whether or not Zenith transitions to renewable fuels, we know that they already cannot be trusted to comply with current permits or conduct their current operations safely. So if we cannot trust them with what they're already doing, they must not be allowed to expand their operations even more. Zenith's greenwash transition to renewables is simply a tactic to distract from perpetual illegality of their operations and put this community at further risk. In the Stand Up to Oil Coalition, we believe in being good neighbors. And we know that what is bad for Portland is bad for the rest of us. We share the same rivers, ocean, and air. And the dangers and risks that Zenith poses to the Portland community, such as spills and air and water pollution, do not have any regard for city or state boundaries. So I ask you to please protect all of us across the region and deny Zenith's air permit.
You're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Seattle stations KVFG LPFM, KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you've been enjoying this show so far, show your support by helping KBOO out with our annual Camp KBOO Summer Membership Drive, focusing on making summer memories and bringing communities together. If you like what you hear, consider becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. And today we're listening to testimony that was given on May 12th at a DEQ hearing on whether or not to approve Zenith Energy's draft air contaminant discharge permit.
My name is Kate Murphy. I'm a senior community organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper. I have a master's in public health with a focus on environmental system and human health. And I'm here today to urge you to use the authority granted to you to prioritize the protection of public health and safety and our environment and deny Zenith Energy's air permit application. With so little time, it's difficult to get into detail about all the reasons that Zenith's operations should not be permitted, but I'm going to use my time to go into a few numbers. 2,128 days since we last stood in this very room giving testimony on the dangers of Zenith to our decision makers, who assured us they would not stand for Zenith expanding operations in our community and then proceeded to facilitate that very outcome, something we hope you will not do. 2 contradictory land use compatibility statements for this air application, 1 claiming no new infrastructure will be used for anything less than 95% renewable fuels, the other allowing for the possibility of adding new infrastructure to handle and blend highly volatile jet fuel. 1 LUX projecting a massive increase in throughput resulting in 40 tons of VOCs emissions per year, the permit limit and more than they are less than they are currently emitting. And another LUX projecting significant additional operations on top of that, greatly increasing Zenith's potential to emit beyond what the permit allows. 65% reduction of Zenith's fine, despite findings around the violations being upheld. Clearly, the deterrence in place, such as fines, particularly greatly reduced fines, do nothing to compel Zenith to tell the truth, as it is currently arguing in court that the conditions from the 2022 LUX are self-imposed and not enforceable. 250,000 plus people in the blast zone locally who are at risk of the loaded trains that are traveling to Zenith, and hundreds of thousands more living along the transport route, one accident having the potential to impact thousands of those lives. Roughly 50 neighborhood associations, more than 20 elected officials, dozens of NGOs, thousands of community members have all spoken out in opposition to Zenith's dangerous operations. 20 plus documented lies, violations, and broken promises attributed to Zenith. 7 years of Zenith failing to operate in full compliance. One right decision to make, one moment to make it. We are counting on you to do the right thing. Stop wasting so many resources on a polluter that won't follow the rules. Please deny Zenith Energy's air permit. Thank you.
My name is David Labby. I'm with Tank the Tanks. I want to add one more statute that gives you authority to deny this application. The OAR 340-216-0082 on terminating an air contamination discharge permit explicitly states, and I quote, if DEQ finds there is a serious danger to the public health, safety, or the environment caused by a permittee's activities, DEQ may immediately revoke or refuse to renew the permit. Now, presumably, DEQ would not grant a permit that it knows that it would have to revoke. So this is part of scope. This is part of the scope that you need to consider. It was not in any of the slides. There were lots of numbers. There was lots of comparisons in the slide. But there was no slide that says, does DEQ pose a serious danger to the public health, safety, or the environment? That is scope. Does DEQ believe that Zenith, with its plans to expand its CEI site into a major export facility of flammable, combustible, and toxic fuels, as outlined in its application, is not a, quote, serious danger to public health and safety? Study after study has defined the enormous risk of the CEI hub and its aging tanks sitting precariously on the Willamette's liquefiable riverbank. Because of this, quote, unquote, serious risk, our state legislature even launched the Fuel Tank Seismic Stability Program, which DEQ also leads, to urgently document and mitigate exactly that risk. Public reports from the DEQ FTSS program so far have only demonstrated that Zenith has yet to comply with the seismic analysis and, if anything, has been reluctant to provide information. They have not shown that Zenith poses no, quote, serious risk. As DEQ considers approving this permit, the question is, will they consider the statute that requires them to decide whether Zenith proposes serious risk? I believe it does. We all believe it does. You have heard in many ways that it does. Please deny this application.
Hello, my name is Lucia Mosca, and I'm an organizer with Sunrise PDX, a youth climate movement. I'm also a resident of Sullivan's Gulch. I actually live right on the gulch. When the freight train goes by, it shakes my house. So I am directly in the blast zone if there was a train derailment. I remember seeing in the news a couple years ago when a train derailed in Palestine, Ohio, and the news showed what happened when hazardous materials entered the soil, water, and air surrounding the area. They are still cleaning up the after effects, and the environment is forever impacted. I don't want to see that happen in Portland. I'm terrified by the thought that it could happen just outside my house or in my community. Approving this permit would allow Zenith to increase their capacity to store and transport fossil fuels and increase the risk of train derailment or other disaster in Portland. We enjoy the Willamette River and clean air. We should not be investing in fossil fuel infrastructure and should prevent the contamination of our soil, water, and air by all means necessary. Protect our environment and deny Zenith's air permit.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Sophie Geyer, and today I want to present you with the real estate opportunity of a lifetime. This home is located in a charming, totally not hazardous North Portland neighborhood. Views include the beautiful Willamette River and Zenith's currently growing energy terminal. Nothing says cozy like the sweet lingering aroma of carcinogens in the air. And you can look forward to even more when Zenith gets its air permit and expands its operations. This prime location in a liquefaction zone presents many exciting opportunities in the event of an earthquake. You'll get a front row seat to a truly once-in-a-lifetime environmental spectacle as millions of gallons of fossil fuels pour into the Willamette. Who needs to live in Lake Oswego when you can have your own toxic water right in your backyard? With Zenith Oil as your neighbor, every day is a surprise. Will it be a toxic leak, an oil train explosion, or just good old-fashioned soil contamination? Don't miss out on this unique opportunity to join Portland's very own sacrifice zone, where you can serve our great state by risking your health and your life for the profits of a Houston-based fossil fuel company. If you'd love to live here, then go ahead and approve this permit. But if for whatever reason you don't, you have the authority to deny this permit, and I urge you to do so. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Michaela McCormick. I'm an organizer with Extinction Rebellion here in Portland. Zenith Energy is a thoroughly untrustworthy enterprise. that has made a habit of lying and violating the law. In 2019, they told the DEQ that they would not increase their throughput of fuels, but almost immediately they did. And they plan to continue expanding their operation by shipping fossil fuels after 2027, handling so-called renewable naphtha, and increasing their handling of sustainable aviation fuel and jet fuel. Sustainable aviation fuel must be blended with a minimum of 50% jet fuel, and naphtha is toxic to aquatic life with long-term effects. In fact, so-called renewable fuels are chemically similar to fossil fuels, and production of most of their feedstocks uses fossil fuel. Overall, the risks presented by Zenith include release of highly toxic and carcinogenic chemicals in every step of their operation, and catastrophic vulnerability to earthquakes due to sitting on a liquefaction zone. In the event of an earthquake, their fuels are likely to flow into the Willamette and Columbia Rivers, a so-called spill that will dwarf that of the Exxon Valdez. But even that does not begin to approach the harm done by the CO2 emissions from the Zenith site and those facilitated by their supplying fuels to countless distribution and transportation systems. As we all know, the climate crisis and its attendant injustices accelerate every day. The climate is collapsing. Is it logical and responsible to even consider enabling Zenith and their ilk to continue poisoning us and our precious home for the sake of every living thing on Earth? Please deny Zenith an air quality permit.
Good evening. I'm Lori King. I live just downriver from Zenith. And when I look out windows of my St. John's house, I see the tanks of the CEI hub across the river. By rights, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality should be doing extensive air quality monitoring in my and adjacent neighborhoods, trying to understand deeply the health effects of the extensive pollution we face because of the CEI hub and other industries. Unfortunately, we don't have such data. We need it. And we need it soon. But I have a nose. I can smell the fumes of fuel when I'm near Zenith, in front of Zenith, and traveling on St. Helens Road, and I can smell the same odors in my yard all too often. I don't think anyone would argue against the claim that the air quality in North Portland neighborhoods and Linton are among Oregon's worst examples. The air quality at schools in St. John's neighborhood is amongst the poorest in the United States. In the air quality permit, Zenith is not prevented from increasing fossil fuel throughput. Zenith, in fact, aims to expand its operations by becoming the West Coast hub for combustible renewables and for SAF, which includes 50% fossil fuels. Zenith's expansion of infrastructure would add more pollution as additional fuels are transferred to and from tanks. The general admonition of Oregon Senate Bill 420, passed in 2007, is that a natural resource agency in Oregon, of course including the DEQ, consider the effects of the agency's action on environmental justice issues. When making determinations about whether and how to act, you have the power. The bill defines environmental justice as the equal protection from environmental and health risks, fair treatment, and meaningful involvement in decision-making of all peoples, regardless of race, color, national origin, immigration status, income, or other identities. The DEQ can and should point to this law and consider environmental justice in its decision about Zenith's air quality permit, as well as others going forward. Please, come on, have the courage to do the right thing and not grant Zenith an air quality permit.
You're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Seattle stations KVFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're enjoying this testimony opposing Zenith Energy that you're hearing today, show your support for this program and all your favorite KBOO programs by donating to Camp KBOO's Summer Membership Drive today. KBOO is community-supported and community-focused radio, bringing you the grassroots, independent, and one-of-a-kind voices from your community. Become a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give or text kboo to 44321. And thanks for supporting community-powered radio. And today we're listening to testimony that was given on May 12th at a DEQ hearing on whether or not to approve Zenith Energy's draft air contaminant discharge permit.
Hi, I'm Dan Sears. I'm the advocacy director for Columbia Riverkeeper. I agree with all the comments before me today, and thank you for having this meeting. I'm concerned that the emission factors you're using are generalized based on limited stack tests. What I saw in the presentation included them handling gasoline. That was the first time I'd seen gasoline included in the materials they're handling. Maybe that's just part of the process, but that was news to some of us here. Naphtha, renewable naphtha, crude oil, this kind of array of different toxic flammable substances moving through, doesn't matter if they call it renewable or not, the impact on the community there is going to continue to get worse, because what we see is that they're proposing to increase the amount moving through. It's very, very different at Zenith today than it was when this process started more than 10 years ago, when people from the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission identified this as an oil train terminal in the making. Vancouver said no to this type of project, and thank you to the people from Vancouver who weighed in, coming all the way over. You know, you set an example in Vancouver of how regulators at the local state level can push back when the oil industry tries to gloss over kind of this mix and match approach to building a big terminal, the way Zenith has done. They've done it, they're doing it. So what I'm asking is that you deny the permit, that you take a very close look at how these different fuels move through the terminal. Will they be blended? Will they be combusted the same way in the vapor combustion units that are one that is to be built, I understand, the other that is there? When it was tested, was that crude oil? Because crude oil is very different than naphtha. And when they turned down the oil terminal in Vancouver, it was because the trains were exploding when they were derailing. And we saw one in Mosier. Naphtha is the part of the oil that blows up. I mean, it's super volatile stuff. And the idea of putting 3 million gallon trains of this going 50 miles an hour down the Columbia River Gorge, upstream from the Columbia River estuary, where you just permitted another refinery at Port Westward, it causes alarm in the communities that are impacted. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having us here. We appreciate the opportunity to be here, but frankly, I can't believe that we're still doing this 6 years into this. We still got to come down here and chat with you folks and put the facts as we know them out in front of you and argue and ask you to please consider the health and welfare of all of us. I'm here from Milwaukee. I live in the blast zone down there. So one thing I have to say to emphasize is that this is a regional issue. It's also a world issue. It's a climate issue. The renewable fuels are not at all what they're cracked up to be. And you guys, you all are smart enough to look at the broad impact of these renewable fuels and see that the impacts are at least as great as, you know, conventional fossil fuels. I'm a technical writer, and most of my reports go to the DEQ, so I have a pretty good idea of how your agency works. And in my point of view, your department compartmentalizes all these permits without looking at the big picture. Based on what I've heard, you have the authority to deny this permit based on OAR 468.70 and 342.16. Look, the Trump administration is not going to save us. The EPA is, you're our last line of defense, you folks. And we are our last line of defense. And I'm asking you to look at the facts, look at the big picture, and please deny this permit for all the reasons that everybody has so clearly articulated here tonight. And I thank you all.
Hi, my name's Jan Zuckerman. When the Giles Lake Industrial Sanctuary was approved by the City of Portland in 2001, it was one of the few large, heavy industrial districts in an urban area. Perhaps at the time this was something to be proud of, but now we know this sanctuary is laced with life-threatening problems. Sandwiched between Forest Park and the Willamette, there are 500 tanks, most built before 1970, some almost 100 years old, holding 350 million tons of liquid fuel on unstable soil. As of last year, only 1% of tanks have been retrofitted according to DEQ guidelines. It's frightening to imagine the kind of catastrophe that will happen with the predicted Cascadia earthquake. With every increase in liquid fuel stored at the hub, our communities are put at risk. The Giles Lake Industrial Sanctuary should be renamed the Giles Lake Industrial Sacrifice District. And now our communities have to listen to greenwashing by Zenith Energy, a company who promises to lead the way to a renewable green future. They plan to increase the throughput of so-called renewable fuels that include naphtha, which we've heard about tonight, and increase SAF and jet fuel. This exacerbates the potential risk of derailments, spills, and explosions, let alone an uptick of emissions which comes with this increase. Please use your legal authority to deny Zenith's air quality permit until you have substantiated the data that Zenith, a company with a long history of violations, has provided regarding their operations. Please use your legal authority to protect our home by refusing to allow Zenith to use the, market dictates card to get out of jail free. Please use your legal authority to deny the permit to Zenith from turning the Giles Lake Industrial Sacrifice Zone into the West Coast hub for renewable fuels. Portlanders do not want this. Who can we turn to protect our communities from the toxic chemicals released during the unloading of these products? Who can we turn to hold Zenith accountable when they have not been honest with their intentions? DEQ has identified 20 violations so far. Should they be rewarded? You are the gatekeeper, the last safeguard for our communities, human and non-human. Please use your moral and ethical legal authority to deny the ACDP. Thank you.
My name is Barbara Ford, longstanding Portlander. And I don't have any facts, but I'm really noting the word sacrifice zone in my mind and heart right now. And I'm thinking of many other sacrifice zones that have happened in the world. Bhopal, India, the Cancer Alley in Louisiana, many other places that aren't even known. And of course, they didn't deserve that, and we do not deserve to be a sacrifice zone in the city of Portland. And especially right now, when there is a political ideology that is rising in this country that is fine with sacrifice zones, it seems like, and that is essentially interested in increasing wealth of companies such as Zenith, and not really caring about local communities, in my opinion, that the importance of local and statewide actors, official and not, is absolutely vital to protect our communities, more so than ever, because the national government is not going to do that for us. We have to do it for ourselves, and we have to depend on the leaders, the folks who work in the organizations, the government organizations that are here to protect us, that we need you and us all to come together in community to protect us. Thank you.
We've been listening to testimony that was given on May 12th at a DEQ hearing on whether or not to approve Zenith Energy's draft air contaminant discharge permit. And you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG up here from KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff and volunteers who continue to do an incredible job of making KBOO the important community resource that it is. And you can help us by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. Or become a member today during Camp KBOO's Summer Membership Drive. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. And thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Damon Mott Story, director of Oregon Sierra Club, about building the world we believe in. We'll go out with music by Alan Toussaint. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and stay in the streets in these challenging times.
Now is the time. Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And do respect of the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man with the kind. That you give, and I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh yes we can. I know we can. Yes we can. And why can't we if we want to? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh yes we can. I know we can. Yes we can. Great gosh almighty. Yes we can. I know we can.
The future, the little bit of boys and girls, and make this land a better land, and the world in which we live, and help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh, yes we can. I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we want to? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know make it if we try.
Oh yes we can. I know we can. Yes we can. Great gosh almighty. Yes we can. I know we can.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross from KGUA FM, Walla, California. When I'm in Portland, which is often, I listen to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
The Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. Welcome to Indigenous in the News. I'm your host, Larry Kay from the Ho-Chunk Nation. along with Gary Wilcox from the Politan Nation. Today, we're joined by Melody MacArthur, award-winning singer-songwriter from the Big Stone Cree Nation and the powerhouse voice behind Sandy, in Bear Grease, the all-Indigenous musical remix of the classic Grease. Melody's journey from music to musical theater is inspiring audiences across North America. Tune in as we explore her path, her passion, and how this show is reclaiming space through song and story. Indigenous in the News starts now. I'm Larry Kay, and joining us from our Miami studios, Gary Wilcox. How you doing today, Gary?
Doing well, Larry, doing well. Today, we're going full throttle with Melody MacArthur, award-winning singer, songwriter, and star of Bear Grease, Indigenous remix of the classical music Grease. Welcome to the show, Melody.
Thank you. Tawa, welcome to you guys too. Tansan Nitsigasin, Melody MacArthur, Miskuchiwa Sky Gonuchinia. How's everybody doing?
Good, good. Hi, Melody.
Very
good to
good.
See you.
Good.
Yeah, good to see you again.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I've been learning all about your new role. I'm excited to hear about the show, so I'm ready.
I'm excited to talk about it.
Cool, cool.
For those who haven't seen it yet, how would you describe what Bear Grease is all about and what makes it uniquely Indigenous?
Right. I always, and as a team, we often try to say that it's going to be not the Bear Grease you were expecting. It's going to be the Grease that you needed to see, right?
Yeah.
So it is a retelling of the classical musical Grease, and it still has those core concepts of, you know, goofing around, clickiness, your friends, greasers, that kind of culture, but also the Danny Sandy love story, right? And I play Sandy. And basically what makes it uniquely Indigenous, I would say, from my perspective, is not only our jokes, you know, mm-hmm. and laughter is a universal language. So we do get a wide reception from both non-Indigenous and Indigenous audiences from the jokes that we do tell, because it's a lived experience by our people, but it's also something that a lot of people can be familiar with as well. So there's the jokes, there's the humor, there's also the parody rewriting of the songs to kind of fit our narrative. So there are classical hits in there like Hopelessly Devoted to You, but for an example, Danny, the lead, had actually composed a rewrite in a round dance kind of powwow style, as you might understand it, song rendition of Hopelessly Devoted to You that is also in the play. You know, and then Crystal and Cloud, aka Lightning Cloud, who have created the show, they were also a musical group. So some of their rap hits are in there as well. And I do rapping and I do the there's Motown hits. There's a whole mixture of things, and it's very eclectic.
Wow.
And what makes it also uniquely Indigenous is our costumes, right? Because we try to put it in there as much as we can. So I have a ribbon skirt, you know, and the way that our hair is done, we're embracing our long brown hair and
right.
our brown eyes, and we're just showing the beauty of Indigenous people as we are, and presenting it as it would have been in the 1950s if colonization maybe did not happen to our people,
mm-hmm.
but it still looks like what people are familiar with in terms of iconic pop duo culture and what the style would have been back then as well, right? Putting
yeah.
a play on it from our own way.
Yeah. Tell us about Sandy.
Sandy's been a force for me. People always ask me about the characters I play and are they close to who I am? And I do kind of think that personally for me as an actor, that every character you play has a little part of you inside.
Mm-hmm.
For Sandy, I have to channel a lot of that because Melody, Mel knows the world, you know? Mel's been some places and
right?
Mel's been through some stuff. But Sandy's innocent and sweet and demure, and she knows what things are, right? But she also is very new to this whole world that she's coming into with the greasers and the resies and the pink aunties, you know,
yeah.
and the tugboat. Like, they're from this whole other place, but she can obviously get in there because she does end up fitting in. But so that has been a challenge for me, kind of come to this
sure.
like vulnerable place on the stage,
mm-hmm.
and also having to trust your co-star, because of course I'm playing the love interest of Danny, right? So there has to be a lot of trust between me and the co-star in terms of reacting off of each other. So
sure.
that's been a challenge for me. And Sandy is just, she's beautiful. She's a beautiful person to play, and I love her very much. And she has given me the opportunity to bring out a part of myself that I've been hiding away for multiple reasons, including a lot of trauma, right? She's healed me, is what I can say about Sandy. And we're on this journey together, me and her.
All right. Can you tell us about the rest of the cast and crew? Who else is bringing Bear Grease to life with you on the stage?
So Bryce Morin is from the Enoch Cree Nation here in Alberta. He plays Danny. Originally, he was Roger. Prior to me and Bryce taking over as the lead star in roles, it was Crystal and Cloud. So Crystal was Sandy when it initially started. And now she stepped back to do more of a very full-time directorial role, which has really helped elevate the show because she can see everything real time and be able to make changes at that moment, right? So we stepped in. Before that, I was Frenchie. Before that, Danny was Roger. So we also have Raven Bright, and I believe he is from Arizona, New Mexico area. He's Dene. And we have Justin Guillaume, who also plays Sunny. He is also Dene. And then we have Haley Robinson. She's an influencer, you know, a very well-known influencer. She is playing Marty right now. We have Tammy Ray from My Neck of the Woods, Treaty 8, who plays Rizzo, a.k.a. Rezzo. And Nippy Askew, she plays Jan. And Rodney McLeod. Rodney McLeod is just a dream. He's from Frog Lake, Alberta. He's just—he's the heart and soul of Bear Grease, we say. He's such a wonderful character. He plays Canucky, a.k.a. Canicky. And we call him Canucky. Maybe that's obvious to you, but I will put it out there that because we're Canadians, right? So, well, okay. Most of us are. So we call him Canucky instead. It's like a play on words.
What was it like performing in a show that's both nostalgic and revolutionary at the same time?
It's been a real dream fulfilled, you know, to be part of something that I always say is just much bigger than us as the people that are help bringing it to life. You know, it's much bigger than us. It's been so, I can see how it's done a couple things for the community. It's been healing for the community, but it's also brought in Native people to the theaters. You know, it's bringing them into that space where we do very much belong, but we've never really had the chance to feel like we should go there. That's somewhere that we can practice our expression, that we can be ourselves, that we can be authentic, you know, and we can challenge ideals and stereotypes about who we are as Indigenous people. That's what I've loved most.
Of all the different plays out there, why pick Grease?
There's a few reasons. I think number one, for like, if you talk to almost every cast member, almost all of us, if not all of us, all have some kind of specific special tie to that movie, or that musical. For Crystal and Cloud, they have their own story. I know that Cloud had actually played one of the characters when he was in high school. So that might be something that really resonates with him. I think that Crystal's parents had their very first date at a drive-in theater to watch Grease. Like special things like that, little like that, that make it just synchronicity for us. Yeah, but also because Grease is so iconic for non-Indigenous audiences, right? It's like trying to speak the language to people about us that they could understand, trying to reach them in a way that they could get, you know, that they could get while they're watching it.
She mentioned you've been on tour for 4 years. How's the audience been responding, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous?
We've gone to theaters and we've also performed at like art centers, but we have also gone to community, you know. That's what's a little bit different than us is when we were first starting, and we still do, because we just recently did a community show in Fond du Lac. It's a remote fly-in community in Saskatchewan. Like, we still do those. But it's so rewarding and beautiful to bring the show to community, because we are a group of, we're not just a couple, we're an ensemble of Native people, Native artists, dancers, singers, actors, so sometimes all trained in both, sometimes just one thing, but we're all coming together and we're telling this story that's not just about love, and it's not just about love that works out, it's about humor and fun and joy. And it's like telling, it's retelling a time that was so awful for our people historically, both in all over Turtle Island, you know, with boarding schools, as you would call them, residential schools, as we called them, that historic time, the legislation that has affected us with colonization, with the Indian Act, like how all those things were really, really hurting our people, especially in that era, not exclusively, but especially in that era. To retell it as if that didn't happen to us, would we be dancing in the streets like John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John? You know, how would that look And what would that be like? And it's been beautiful because we've had elders at our show who have cried. And we've had children at the show who when you're playing the performance, because it's live, they're engaging, you know, they're like talking to our characters. Like, they get really passionate when the little ones come and watch. They're like, you know, they get upset about the way people are treating Sandy. it's a beautiful, beautiful yeah. thing to see. It's been a great reception, including non-Indigenous people as well. We get great reception. They laugh hard and they give us such good feedback. And they, if I kind of feel like it's like breaking down a wall between us and them too.
Yeah, I got a chance to see the show on YouTube, some clips, and I was really, really, really moved. It was an excellent performance. My hat goes off to you all. You have put on a really great show. Yeah, I really thought it was amazing. I can't wait to catch it, you know, personally.
Yes, it will be such a whole different experience.
Yes,
and we're adding a new segment too, that we're really excited about as well. That's coming. It's going to start here in New York.
All right.
Can you share a moment with us about the show or the tour that's really stuck with you both emotionally and spiritually?
There's been quite a few key moments. The ones that stick out in my mind are ones where we've got to engage with elders and hear their feedback about how beautiful it was to see someone who looked like them, you know, and take them back to a time when they might not have had that kind of experience, but they saw it on TV and now they see it. They see us in themselves or themselves in us. And so those have been beautiful moments. Performing on stages that I knew I'd get to one day, I just didn't know how. And it's beautiful that it's been with Bear Grease. So like the National Arts Center in Ottawa, Canada, I mean, that's where Parliament is, you know, that's mm-hmm. where our Prime Minister, which would be the equivalent of your president, that's where he works, and that's where all the legislation that goes that is either against our people or makes creative and wonderful changes for our people, like that's where that all happens. So that was a powerful moment as well, to be able to bring that Indigenous story to that national center and have that kind of platform at that time was really, really beautiful. And being able to lately, there's so many memories, but recently it's been able to, at the end of every show, announce, really tell the audience a dream came true. We made it happen. We did it, going off Broadway, New York, and telling every audience at the end of the show that. Before we announced it publicly, we were doing it kind of little key mooch, which is like, you know, on the down low. with audience members who came to shows. And that was so precious because it was just like, wow, and the energy, and like I get goosebumps just thinking about it, how beautiful it's been to be able to share it's right. come true nice, with Native nice. People and non-Native awesome. People.
Some of our listeners don't know it, but I've been playing your music for a long time on my music show, and I've been jamming to a lot of pop music, and you're also an award-winning R&B artist. How does your music background shape your approach to musical theater?
It really helps for a number of different reasons, but I have learned a lot as I've gone along because I'm not used to dancing. I'm not used to dancing and singing. So it's really helped kind of develop me as a performer and singer in that way, because you got to get your endurance, right?
Right.
But also learning how to breathe and just work with it. So that's been great. But prior to joining, I had a lot of advantages in terms of being able to know how to take care of my voice, how to rehab my vocals, how to use my breath work, and how to develop different sounds and how to do different styles, because mm-hmm. in the show, like I said, I'm doing about 3 to 4 different genres. So doing Motown at one point, I'm doing some of the Grease songs, so like musical theater, and then some of them are rap songs and some of them are like hip-hoppy R&B stuff. So being able to have been that artist who already was experimenting in that way is what I'm getting at, is that because I've got 6 albums, some of them have hip hop influences, some R&B, some pop, some country. So that being said, really helped give me an advantage in working with the character and doing what I needed to do to play them.
Nice.
I'm glad you said that. Do you bring any of your own musical style into your performances as Sandy?
I think maybe when I'm actually singing. So when I'm doing the skit parts, I'm playing the character. And I actually don't speak. I speak in a different tone and a different voice that she. This is my speaking voice. But Sandy's more like, you know, like, yeah, guys, for real. You know, she's just really preppy and just sweet and sweet and sweet. Right. All the time. Layering on all that sweetness. But for terms of performance vocally, yeah, for most songs, unless it's particularly me being the sweet Sandy. So like if I did Summer Lovin', which we call Summer Snaggin', I'll sing in a different tone than my usual self. I'll sing in a different tone than my usual self. But when I'm doing Motown, because it's kind of before I become my character, I'll sing as myself because I'm also trying to showcase me, Melody, the singer as well, because that's one of my main talents.
What role has music played in your personal healing or cultural journey?
Majorly, you know. I've had a lot of trauma, as many of the people in the cast have and many of our audience members that come in. And music has been very healing and also therapeutic. Cathartic. It's helped me to bounce back ideas off myself, because you know when you're an artist you tend to internalize everything. You don't really, unless you're expressing yourself through the art, you're not really sharing a lot. I don't know why we're just made that way, but it helps me to have ways of putting these ideas outside of my brain and really reflecting on them, which has enabled me to process feelings a lot better, you know. So music has been a staple in my life of healing always, and I'm so grateful for it. And I know that it doesn't belong to me, it's a gift, and I try to use it because I know it's a gift. I try to use it for good as much as I possibly can and share it as much as I possibly can.
How long does the tour last, these productions, when you're performing?
With Bear Grease, it's usually 1 to 2 months at a time.
Okay.
Sometimes there'll be little tiny breaks in between here and there, maybe. But usually it's a commitment of up to 3 months, little break, again, 3 months, little break. It's been kind of like that. It's a little, you know, it's showbiz, so it's not always that consistent, but it's pretty much, that's the nutshell of it.
5 days a week, 6 days? A lot.
24/7, man.
Bump it up.
Bear Grease.
Bump it up. Right, right.
What does it mean to you personally to represent the Big Stone Cree Nation on a national stage like this? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you to do that?
Well, it's becoming more of an international stage now.
Yeah, right on.
I'm really proud to do that because, you know, because of the interworkings of the Indian Act, and I know you guys don't have that in America, but here, you know, there could be so many reasons why I wouldn't have membership with my band for just mostly patriarchal reasons. So my mother was actually had to fight for her right to be a status band member through her father. And then I had a kind of what we call affiliation membership, so not full. And then I had to go gather around my signatures to go get that done. Wow. So the fact that I can still represent the community in this way is very special, because I know at any, for any little reason, at least in the time that I was born in the early 90s, it's a lot harder for them to do these things now. But and prior to that, it was very, very easy for a woman to lose her status and have no sense of community, have lost her sense of belonging, you know, and then not be able to pass it on to her children. So it's, in that way, it's been very, very special, and I'm very, very grateful.
Mm-hmm. Today, our guest is Melody MacArthur from the Big Stone Cree Nation and the powerhouse voice behind Sandy in Bear Grease. They're coming to New York June 10th. Find out how you can attend at BearGreaseLive.com. Here's a taste of the fun and energy they bring to the stage. This is Summer Snaggin' from Bear Grease.
Summer days, drifting away to all those summer. my hair, it felt so nice.
How do you stay grounded and connected to your community while traveling? I know you stay busy, as you mentioned, and while you're performing so much.
I would say it's through my engagement with the fans. Okay. And so when I say my community in that sense, it's all Native people. Right. So I engage with my fans a lot online. Like I do really take the, it's like a full-time job though, but I do really take the time to comment back and really engage with them as much as I can, because we're just, you know, I'm just being myself. I'm just a res kid, you know, we're just making jokes. We're laughing. Yeah, it's a good time. And that's how I kind of stay grounded and connected with my people.
Right on.
What's the creative energy like backstage with the rest of all the Indigenous cast?
Well, when we're doing a show, it's very... It's very adrenaline. It's very chaotic, but it's also, I mean, we know the show backward and forward, right? But like little things can happen. I've had wardrobe malfunctions. And you have to adapt to the situation. So there's not a lot of downtime when you're backstage until we introduce that intermission that we now have. There's like 20 minutes of just, okay, let's decompress for a second and gather ourselves. Otherwise the energy is very high and good. And, for the most part, we're just like, you know, we're very helpful to each other. If someone's missing something, it's like, oh, here you go. Or can I help you? Or can't find something and there's panic. You know, we figure out how to make it work in the moment because you got very little time to react and adapt. But we've really learned a great deal of that, just working with each other. And you got to be a good teammate and the ego has to go for it to all kind of work out and flow as good as it does for us.
Yes, yes. Can you tell us a little bit about the creators of Bear Grease? Crystal Lightning and Henry.
Cloud. Yeah, that's Crystal Lightning and Henry Andrade, aka Cloud, which make Lightning Cloud together. They are they have their production company. They started out as a rap hip hop duo. They're husband and wife, and they live here in Edmonton. That's where our main headquarters are. But they both are originally from Los Angeles. Crystal is an Enoch Cree Nation member here. Henry is of Mexican ancestry. Mm. And, you know, they're just a beautiful, beautiful couple. And Henry does the production. Henry, before we hired a team, Henry and Crystal were just doing everything, you know, the booking and all the emails and the negotiations, the back and forth, the working with 10 people's different schedules to make rehearsals happen and shows happen and tours happen. Like, they're just so go-getting and so entrepreneurial and very inspirational. And I can't say enough good things about them. I love them so much. They're wonderful to work for. They're amazing. They're a great team. And a testament to that is that we did make it all together to New York.
All together, right?
I was impressed with hearing how they came up with the idea. Sitting on the couch as they were watching the show, they were singing the song, and that's how they came up with this whole production. I thought it was just amazing how they did that.
If you think of like Natives be doing that all the time, right? Like
you're
watching something, usually something really, really, I'll just say non-Native, we're like, how could we make this something for us? And we're like doing that, you know, that little bitter rant back and forth and like witty stuff and parody. And, you know, we do that a lot just like in everyday life. And I think that's not surprising that they came up with something that was just so funny. And they thought to themselves, they took it a step further though and said, that could be something. And then they went and made it something.
That's amazing.
Yes.
What advice would you give to our young Indigenous performers dreaming of hitting the stage like you? What advice would you have for them?
There's a lot of things that I could say, but what sticks out in my mind right now is that number one, you gotta be like, if you're gonna commit to something, you commit to something, you know? You be willing to do the hard work, you be willing to show up on time, and if you can't be on time, be early, you know? Mm-hmm. You really show people that you can run with the best of them. You could be so talented, but you know, it's not helpful to you if you can't be that person that's willing to go above and beyond. And I know that as an Indigenous person or a person of color, it feels like we're always doing that, but that's just the way that it is until it's not like that for us no more. And it will get there one day, as long as we're willing to put in that work and that time and that effort that we may not think we should have to, but we just do, and we will do it because we want to rise to that occasion, you know? The other thing is being willing to learn. If you don't know something, go learn it. Willing to educate yourself, you know, and often you're going to be the only Native person in the room, because I have been many, many, many times. And the magic happens outside of this. And this is what I call the comfort zone. Magic's out here. You know, this is where the growth is. This is where the confidence is built. This is where the good things happen to you. You know, taking risks. And my main thing, and I say it online, and it's my main mantra, is to just do it afraid until you're not anymore.
Yeah, I love it. Salute. What's next for you and after Bear Grease? More music, more theater, something new?
I've actually got a few things on the go here, but I am actually taking to theater quite a bit, and I've auditioned for some roles, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm really taking to theater. Something maybe possibly non-musical, so that I could just focus on the acting portion of it, maybe something more dramatic. Yeah. I don't know, but I'm really open right now. My, you know, the world is the oyster, as they say. I won't say it's mine. I'm just going to say it's the oyster at this time. I'm here for the ride, and I'm willing to do the work is what I know.
I can't wait to turn on the TV and see you.
but keep going.
keep it going.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yes. Melody, where can we go to find out about the show, and how do we get a hold of you?
For Bear Grease stuff, you can go to BearGreaseLive.com. That is our main official website, but Bear Grease is also on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. And their handle is at Bear Grease Live. BearGreaseLive. Bear Grease Live.
And
you can find me online too on all those things. And my handle is at Melody MacArthur Music. Melody is in the song.
Sure, right on. And you're coming to the U.S. too, right?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Michael Van Cleek. I'm tapped into the vibe and the rhythm of the river of the city of Portland, and you are too, because you're listening to KBOO Portland.